forever be a legend here at Tottenham. It's a massive club. Everything I do is for the long term.
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run. He scored.
That's going to have a crack. He is, you know. Oh, I say.
Here's Lucas Moura.
Oh, they've done it. The wait for silverware is over.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to our first reaction podcast in terms of a Champions League game on the Tottenham way this season. I'm Marcus Buckland. Delighted to say that George Sessions from PA has come straight from the game to give us his thoughts. I'll be honest, I wasn't at the match. I was watching. I was also diverted by extraordinary goings-on in the game between Juventus and Dortmund. Shows what I know about football, because I said to my producer tonight, that game has got 0-0 written all over it. And at halftime, it was 0-0. Problem was, there were 8 goals in the second half. But I did see the key moments from the lane. 923 days since Spurs last played in the Champions League. And the other good stat that I'm just going to throw out straight away is that we're now unbeaten in 21 home games in UEFA competitions. So that is good. It wasn't vintage. George, it was a win. Actually, before we talk about the game, just tell me about the atmosphere, because certainly watching on television and reading various reports afterwards, there did seem to be something missing in terms of the atmosphere, and perhaps the fact there are only 220, I think, Villarreal fans may have contributed to that.
Yeah, it was a bit flat, to be honest, which was unexpected. You know, back in the Champions League, it felt like a big occasion. But yeah, even before kickoff, it didn't have that kind of big game feel. And Spurs kind of had a, you know, there's a brilliant tifo. They played Can't Smile Without You, but it just didn't feel like last season's Europa League games. I guess they were knockout games and there was loads more riding on it. But yeah, it kind of started as a bit of a flat evening and never really, really had massive lift off, even with a fourth minute goal. So yeah, the atmosphere was pretty subdued, I think it's fair to say. There's 54,000, you know, similar sort of number to what the group stage Europa League games were. So not massively out of the ordinary that, but I think, you know, the £96 was the most expensive ticket, quite a lot, I guess, when you've already got, you know, a Carabao Cup game next and you've got three more at home as well. It started flat, and I think it kind of, you know, that wasn't the reason for Spurs not being absolutely vintage, but it was quite noticeable. But job done in the end, 1-0 win. I actually had a feeling it might be 1-0, so I'll give myself a pat on the back, even though I wasn't able to say that on the reaction pod after West Ham, because it wasn't on. But yeah, Thomas Frank will be delighted. A fourth clean sheet, a fourth win. A win, not one that will long live in the memory.
No, but it is a win, and it's important. And we've been saying it, you know, a couple of times already in this format. You want to get points on the board as quickly as possible, and they've done that. The goal, as you suggested, came very early. I mean, Lucas Bergvall, who I thought was absolutely fantastic again tonight, drives in from the right, whips a ball towards Richarlison, but the goalkeeper, poor old Luis Junior, I do not know what he is doing, and I'm sure he's still doesn't know what he did, but it was very, very costly.
It really was. Marcus, you might have seen it. I think it was last season or maybe the season before. Paolo Gazzaniga, ex-Spurs.
Yes.
Some people remember him. He had a very similar moment for Girona against Paris Saint-Germain. I think that was last season. And to be honest, I watched the cross come in, see that he'd gathered it, and actually looked away at my laptop to write down, you know, Spurs had failed to make the most of that. And then it rolled in. And there's a brilliant clip of Thomas Frank doing the same thing, arms in the air, thinking Richarlison's going to score, and then realising he isn't, and then arms back in the air because you've seen the ball roll in. Horror moment for the goalkeeper. And to be honest, he was pretty suspect all night, and that was also a little bit of a disappointment that Spurs didn't actually test him more. You know, Xavi Simmons smashed one over after about 2 minutes, and then the goalkeeper lets in a howler, and you think, all right, let's start kind of peppering the goal and see what he's about. But Spurs had one shot on target all night. Pape Sarr's kind of 25-yarder in sort of around half an hour. So it kind of summed up the night in a sense. That it was a 1-0, it's an own goal that's done it. And I think the XG was 0.58 for Tottenham versus 0.53 for Villarreal. So yeah, it's all there on paper. It wasn't a classic, but it was 3 points.
Yeah, you're right. That shot on target from Sol was the only one from both teams in the 90 minutes. There were some other moments. I noted that you were pretty adamant that you thought Spurs should have got a penalty when Richarlison was clipped. There was also a handball, and I was thinking, yeah, well, I've certainly seen those given. Neither were. I don't know if you've been able to have a look at them again, but do you think Spurs were a bit robbed not to at least get one penalty out of those two incidents?
I've not seen either back, unfortunately, but I got a lot of replies telling me that Richarlison's penalty would have been very soft. So maybe my naked eye wasn't sort of bang on at that moment. And Richarlison does go down quite easily at times. But yeah, I guess because it's in Europe, you're never too sure. You always wonder if maybe one of those would have been given. In fairness, Villarreal did have some very good chances first half, actually. Nicolas Pepe, one of the two former Arsenal players in the team for Villarreal, he was excellent. I think that's probably the toughest, kind of ride Jed Spencer's had, I think, over the last 12 months. He's played Salah, he's played, Bukayo Saka and done really well, but actually he did struggle against Nicolas Pepe. There was one moment quite early on, Nicolas Pepe cut inside. Mickey van der Ven may have really got a crucial touch on it to deflect it wide. And then again, midway through the half, he cut inside again and picked up Buchanan, who probably should have scored, actually, and he put it wide. So even though there was only that one shot on target, and that happened in the first half, there were moments for PSG in that first half where they could have punished Spurs. And I guess, in terms of the team lineup, I thought it was probably the right time for João Paulinho to drop out. I was pleased as well to kind of see Richarlison come back in and Bergvall keep his place rather than Bergvall dropping out. And I thought Bergvall was brilliant, but it did kind of make me think maybe Spurs did actually miss João Paulinho's kind of solidity there, because they did get played through midfield a couple of times and the defence was pulled apart on one or two occasions, and doesn't feel like that happens as often when João Paulinho is there. So maybe in hindsight he was missed, but it did kind of feel the right time for him to drop out.
Yeah, I have to say I had that feeling, certainly throughout the middle part of the second half when Spurs just kept giving the ball away. And I know Thomas Frank made reference to that afterwards. It was extraordinary. Even Romero, who at the weekend we were waxing lyrical about his distribution, but everybody was giving the ball away. Unfortunately, Villarreal more often than not then gave it away too. So it wasn't the highest quality of games from that point of view. Just in terms of chances being created or not being created by Spurs, before maybe we go on to some of the specifics, for example, is Xavi playing in the right position, et cetera, but I think I'm right in saying that in the last three games now, Bournemouth, West Ham and tonight, Spurs have only had 7 shots on target. And I also understand that Thomas Frank is looking, to build from the back. And I started to go through some previous seasons and see when we had last kept 4 clean sheets out of 5. Obviously, it didn't happen during the Postecoglou era. I got fed up going back 2 or 3 seasons. It's obviously not happened for a while. So he's building from the back. But sooner or later, I guess we're going to get a little itchy if we don't see more venom in front of goal.
Yeah, I think that's fair because, as fans, what do you want? One, you want to see your team win. 2, you want to see good football. If you can see both, perfect. But you're sort of happy with one or the other, I guess. Generally, obviously, we're seeing wins at the minute. We're not seeing free-flowing football. Thomas Frank was pretty adamant afterwards, this team will score goals. There's enough quality to do so. I think 2 moments really stood out for me tonight, which, won't be in any highlights, I don't think. In the first half, Xavi plays in Jed Spence and he's sort of running forward, and it's a good counter attack, and it's only Richarlison in the box, and even kind of Xavi's not that near the area. Kudos isn't really busting a gut to get in, one of those occasions where actually you think Brennan Johnson would be, you know, running and doing everything he can to get to the back post. And that again happened in the second half. Pedro Porro broke forward. And again, kind of Richarlison was sort of jogging into the area. But there was kind of a lack of sort of desire and I guess kind of in hunger and intent to get into the box and be on the end of that cross. Maybe that sort of subconsciously the team being so focused on this clean sheet mentality that Lucas Bergvall spoke about afterwards and others have mentioned because they're so determined to kind of keep that solid base and that structure. But there's some brilliant footballers in this team and, you know, you're not going to score goals if you've only got one person in the box. And actually, I think the actual goal that Spurs do score, Lucas crosses it in. Richarlison's the only person in the box once again. I think that's something, you know, Thomas Frank needs to kind of, you know, I asked him myself, that midfield balance, is that the kind of key to unlocking the attack? Because it feels like every single game, if it's Saar, Bentic or Palhinha, doesn't feel like there's enough, not a passer in there. If it's Bergvall, there is a passer, but maybe you need Javi Simmons as a 10 to be in the box. I think that's what he's got to solve, really. He's got to find the kind of perfect three, which will change for different opposition, but he needs to find someone that's going to be bombing forward to get into the box. Because if you've got one player in the box in Richarlison, maybe two in Richarlison, kudos, the delivery's got to be so accurate to be scoring goals. And that kind of stood out for me tonight, that kind of lack of desire to get in the box. And I do think Brennan Johnson has that. I'm jumping forward now, but it wouldn't surprise me if we see Brennan at start against Brighton on Saturday, because I think Spurs have lacked that the last couple of games and he hasn't started, in fairness, to us the last couple of games.
I think what I like, I mean, is the fact that there are these options and yeah, of course he's got to get the balance right. And where he's clever, I think, is that he'll be able sooner or later. And he, by the way, it's really interesting to see how hard he was on himself about the Bournemouth game. And it was a shocker, but he learns clearly. And, I think he'll be able to unpick the right selection policy depending on the opposition. I am interested in your thoughts on Xavi, of course, made his home debut tonight playing on the left. And we mentioned after the last game that he himself has said that, you know, primarily he's a number 10. And you get the impression of obviously if he was operating there, he would be more effective. What did you make of his contribution and how do you see him developing in terms of where he's going to play more often than not?
I think, first of all, he was lucky to stay on the pitch. The Villarreal boss agrees with me as well, Marcelino, who sort of gave me an eyeball on Tuesday when I was asking him a couple of questions about Thomas Partey. And today he was very cross that Xavi Simmons stayed on the pitch. He said he didn't have a good game. And the referee, in his words, was a homer, which is insinuating as a home-favouring referee, which is quite amusing. But he's spot on because, you know, Xavi Simmons caught Pepe on a kind of a transitional moment in the second half. And you've seen that as a yellow card so many times. And Xavi already had a yellow in the first half, which probably wasn't a yellow, to be fair. But once he's on a yellow card, he's walking a tightrope. And then there was a maybe a 60-40, 70-30 penalty incident that they kind of caught the Villarreal player, which, you know, it probably would have been harsh to give it. But if it had, it would have been a yellow card as well. So he didn't have, you know, the best night. I didn't think he was poor necessarily. And actually, from a kind of positive slant, you know, I don't think the left is going to be his position. I think he will be a number 10, but maybe Thomas Frank is kind of trying to ease him in and transition him in by playing him on the left. And when he trusts him more and Xavi knows more what the team want from him, he'll play as number 10. But he did link up with Jed Spence a couple of times. There were some lovely back heels into him. One brilliant ball through and Jed kind of did overlapped actually for that scenario where there was not enough people in the box. So there was kind of glimpses tonight of Xavi Simmons. Especially getting a little bit of a relationship with Jed Spence. And I guess what I do really like about him is his awareness. He's so aware of what's around him. Obviously, he's going to give the ball away from time to time. He's a creative player and he's taking people on. But he really seems to have a picture all the time, hence the flicks and some of the little tricks we saw. And the shot he smashed over in the first 2 minutes kind of made me think, oh, this is going to be Xavi Simmons' night. And unfortunately, it wasn't in the end. But I think there's enough to be encouraged by. You know, he's obviously still a young man, new to a club. I do actually think, in a way, the Champions League might be his kind of platform, I think, for the first couple of months. I had a feeling he would do really well tonight, but I sort of look at, you know, Copenhagen, Slavia Prague, going away to PSG's old club. I wonder if the kind of intensity, just being a notch down in the Champions League, as he's getting to grips with the huge intensity in the Premier League, if we might see his best performances in the Champions League. But yeah, I think the number 10 is where he's going to play in the long run, probably in a couple of weeks' time, hopefully, because we don't want to see him stuck out on the left the whole time. But it wasn't perfect from him. It wasn't a brilliant performance, but there were flashes to give fans a bit of excitement, I'd say.
Yeah, I thought actually the way he started the game tonight, I thought this is going to be, you know, a bit of a vintage display. But yeah, he's got to learn. He's got to come to terms with not so much the speed in the Champions League, where, as you say, it's maybe a little less intense in the Premier League. But you've got to be careful. And actually, on the subject of potential red cards, I think maybe Mickey van der Ven was a little bit fortunate not to be shown red as well. And obviously, the last thing we want is van der Ven being suspended for any length of time.
Well, actually, on this point of suspensions, it's only 3 yellow cards, and you've got a one match ban, and you know Spurs already had Richarlison and Xavi straight away tonight. Villa might have had, and Van der Ven as well got a yellow card for that incident. So they're all only 2 away now from suspension, which is quite frustrating. Initially, I thought that was a penalty. The kind of discourse in the press box was that the Villarreal forward, Mika Tuadeze, was going away from goal. I've watched it back just before this episode. I don't think he's going away from goal enough for it not to be a red card, to be honest. If Van der Ven doesn't bring him down, he's not going away from goal enough to not get a shot on goal. So I think Mickey is lucky there, actually. And Spurs are lucky there, clearly. Marcellino actually didn't moan too much about that, which, you know, maybe shows Villarreal weren't too frustrated with that decision. But yeah, it was just kind of another one of those scenarios where Spurs just didn't look as solid as we've seen. You know, it should be said that they're playing a really, really good team of Villarreal, actually. I was kind of struck when I was doing my research yesterday how consistent they've been. I think it's kind of the last 12 seasons they've only finished lower than 8th once, which is remarkable consistency, and sort of reminded me of Spurs, actually, because they've kind of been bouncing around between 4th and 8th for the last 10, 11 years, which Spurs were for quite a long time. So they're a really, really consistent team. Made the semi-finals, actually, this competition in 2022. So, you know, they're no mugs. You know, we're sitting here and analysing the game and saying, you know, there wasn't a lot of chances, and you know we want to see a bit more excitement. But Spurs were against really good opposition tonight, should be said. So, I think Mickey was lucky. I think Spurs were a little bit lucky, but it's not a bad trait to have. To be winning ugly, I guess, this early on.
Well, absolutely. Inevitably, what goes around comes around, and at some stage we'll probably be the victims of a bad decision, just as we were with the disallowed goal for Romero at the weekend. But I think we've got to take what we can. Sometimes it's better to be lucky than good. It is 3 points. You touched on Thomas Partey. We've got to be very careful what we say here, because, of course, there's all sorts of legal developments happening. But I think it's fair to say the biggest boost, certainly, were when he came on. And it sounds like you and Marcellino have been having a bit of a running dialogue over that particular selection issue that he's had to face.
Yeah, it kind of has been the elephant in the room, I think, over the last kind of 24 hours. There was myself and a number of other British journalists at the Matchday Minus One press conference Tuesday night at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and there was quite a lot of questions about Thomas Partey. He's obviously got allegations and accusations and charges hanging over his head, for serious allegations, it should be said, which we won't go into, but Marcellino was quite frustrated to be asked so many questions about Thomas Partey. And look, you know, no one was sure whether he would play or not. He's due to appear in court this week. It's meant to be Wednesday in London. And he was on the bench and warmed up for the first time around the 50-minute mark, got very loudly booed, plenty of chants followed. And then, yeah, 78 minutes he come on and again, very loudly booed. I actually, when Mickey van der Ven fouled Nicolas Pepe and Thomas Partey was standing over the ball, my mind cast back to the free kick, or it might not have actually been a free kick, but he scored a brilliant goal for Arsenal a couple of years ago and a 3-1 win at the Emirates. And I thought, oh, God, this is it's written all over for this. But actually, Nicolas Pepe took it and sent it just wide. So, it was, you know, Nicolas Pepe, Thomas Partey, beg pardon, was quite a big sort of pre-match subject, and he did play 12 minutes, and there's obviously plenty going on with him this week. But Spurs will hope to be partying at the seaside this weekend, won't they?
Well,
when they take on Brighton.
We will, and you know, this Brighton game, end of last season, of course, I mean, Spurs have been drinking since the Europa League final, but Brighton tore us apart, and actually, even if we haven't always beaten them, and to be honest, I mean, we've actually had some pretty poor results. They've always played well against us. And, you know, we're looking at the fixtures at the start of the season. I've slightly dismissed Bournemouth, and I think they're a really good side. And I was talking to a good mate of mine who's a Liverpool fan. He was saying that, you know, first night of the season, Liverpool were a bit lucky to get all 3 points against them. So, you know, maybe we can draw a line under that game. But then I thought, Brighton away this weekend off the back of a Champions League week as well is going to be testing. Now, two changes were made to the starting 11 tonight. Bentancur and Richie came in for Polina and Tell. What's your hunch as to what Frank is going to do on the South Coast on Saturday?
I'm in an iron with this one since full time, actually, because ordinarily you think, oh, he'll make, you know, 4-5 maybe, because it's, you know, Champions League, Premier League, you've got to keep it fresh. But Spurs have actually got the beauty of Tuesday to Saturday football with this one, which is a world away from Thursday to Sunday. It has to be said, you know, those two extra days do make a massive difference. So I'm now maybe leaning more towards just two or three changes. I mean, what do you think in terms of the changes? I mean, I do think Brennan Johnson will play on Saturday, and I do think Polina comes back in, you know. Is Udogi ready to start, or maybe does he play against Doncaster? What do you think, Marcus?
Yeah, I mean, this is. I like the fact that we've got these options. I don't have a specific answer. I mean, what I do want to know, because when he did come on, I was being distracted, but obviously Colin Mwani got a few minutes on the pitch tonight. I mean, do we know how far away from full fitness he is? Because clearly an issue up front at the moment is there. Tell is not a ready-made centre-forward. Richarlison, got to be careful with him. We still don't know how long Solanke's going to be sidelined for. So I'm itching to see Mwani at his best, but sounds to me like he's still a little bit off, certainly from starting a Premier League game away from home.
Yeah, actually, I thought he looked quite bright when he came on. He set up a chance. Ball got fizzed into him and he chested it down and Paulinho fired over. But actually, it looked, you know, looked a bit of a presence up top, to be honest. Would he start at Brighton? I'd probably say no, but he'll start against Doncaster, I think, if I was to be pushed. But Thomas Frank did speak about him on Friday, on when would it have been, Tuesday, and said that he's not ready to play 90 minutes yet. But as a footballer, he probably would play 90 minutes if he had to, because he'd think he's fine for it. But the sort of difference between him and Xavi Simons is that it sounds like he wasn't really training with PSG. So he's kind of missed out on a pre-season, which is actually a little bit of a similar story for Destiny Udogie. I kind of wonder, it sounds like Destiny's been fit. He was on the bench for Bournemouth, I think it was, wasn't it? But it sounds like he's been fit for quite a while. But actually Spurs are almost trying to get a mini pre-season into him after he missed the pre-season, because I think Italy wanted to call him up actually for the September internationals, and it was decided between the three of them to keep him away from those games and keep building up his minutes. So I think, as you say, there is options. I certainly can see Brennan Johnson coming in. Maybe even Xavi drops out for that one. New signing, big money signing, but he's not going to play every single minute. Maybe Brennan on the left, Richie down the middle, and potentially Kudos again on the right. Paulina comes into midfield, I would probably say for Saar, I think. I think Saar's probably the one that's due to drop out, and Bergvall's performances the last couple of weeks have been excellent. And actually, Thomas Frank kind of hinted tonight at one of his answers when he spoke about, you know, the relationships in the squad, and he said Porro and Kudos have got a really good relationship, and now Lucas has come onto the right side and he's building a relationship with them. And it just kind of hinted to me that, you know, I'm not sure at the start of the season Thomas Frank saw Lucas as a real starter right now. He saw him as an option off the bench and maybe a rotation player. But I think the way he's playing, he's maybe forcing his way into that.
Yeah, definitely.
So I think it'd be a Paulina, Bentancur and Bergvall midfield. And then maybe Udogie for Spence. You know, Porro's kind of the marathon man, isn't he? He can play every minute. And then probably a heavy rotation for Doncaster in the Cup. So I'd probably say three changes, I think. But that will be a tough game at Brighton. They're a really good team, as you've alluded to.
Well they are. And I thought Porro was really good actually tonight, by the way. And I think this is a big game now at Brighton, because then, as you say, next week you'd like to feel that Doncaster won't cause too many problems. And then it's Wolves at home. Obviously, they've made their worst ever start to a season. Don't want to underestimate them. But I think it's important now that we've got this role. You know, we've bounced back from the Bournemouth defeat, and Brighton, we owe Brighton a good performance, definitely. And yeah, they're dangerous. So I just hope I'd rather play the big guys this weekend, and then you can rest, certainly for Doncaster, and then see what happens for the Wolves game as well. The one other thing I was going to ask you about, and I wrote his name down and I've forgotten it, but on the bench tonight, there was a 16-year-old who played during the afternoon and then finds himself on the bench. Can you tell us a bit more about what that was all about?
Yeah, Janiah Byfield. He's had a hell of a few months, actually, because, as you said, Mark, he's only 16 years old, but he was actually part of the first team squad for pre-season, and he went out to the tour to South Korea, actually. And I watched him play a few minutes away to Luton, actually, in July. And actually, funnily enough, watched him this afternoon, because I took my little boy, River, to that under-19 match. Janiah did fairly well. Spurs conceded three goals, but they did win 5-3. And then, what was that, a 1 o'clock kickoff? 8 hours later, he's on the bench, Champions League game. It's amazing. I'm fairly certain he was on the bench for the Super Cup as well, so he's had some brilliant experiences. He's only 16, a centre back, very good in the ball, actually. And one of kind of a nice crop, Luca Williams-Barnett, you know, the other big name from the Spurs Academy. You know, they're all very highly rated, actually, and doing a really good job. Mm. Sort of previously under Stuart Lewis, who's now stepped up from the under 18 coach to be part of Thomas Frank's first team, and now Wayne Burnett's, you know, the under 21 boss at Tottenham is working with those guys. And, you know, he's the under 21 boss, but he's working with 16-year-old in Janiah Byfield, 17-year-old in another 16-year-old in Luca, you know, Williams-Barnett. You know, that these guys are so young, but they've already been promoted into the under 21 team, which kind of shows you how highly rated they are. So he's certainly the day to remember. I guess kind of throwing it forward, you know, I'd really hope that actually maybe Janiah or Luca do actually play against Doncaster. It'd be brilliant for the academy, especially with so many young players out on loan this season. Mikey Moore, you know, Jamie Donnelly, Will Lancashire. There's not many left around in the first team setup. Callum Olusese actually is another really talented player, and Tiernan Thompson scored today as well. It'd be great if kind of one of those four, you know, are on the bench against Doncaster and can maybe get on if Spurs are a few goals up. That'd be a nice touch from Frank. But I'm not sure off the top of my head how strong his record was with sort of bringing through young players at Brentford. Brentford didn't have an academy, but they did have Brentford B. And I think he brought through one or two, but wasn't his kind of, you know, big forte. But it'd be great. Be great if one of them or two of them can play on against Doncaster.
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, there's so many talented young. I mean, Spurs have had so much success at youth level over the past two or three seasons. So absolutely, what I think it's just great that you can bring a youngster in to get the experience that obviously he had on the bench tonight, and it would make sense. And it's always a feel good factor, isn't it, when a youngster can come on, and we had that a little bit in the Europa League last season. So yeah, hopefully against Doncaster, so that will be the case. It's late, so I don't think we've got too much else. Is there any other business we need to attend to before we go to bed, dreaming of Lucas Bergwall marauding up and down the pitch again?
Well, you love a prediction, Marcus, so tell me, Brighton, what's your prediction?
Yeah,
what was yours for West Ham, would you write? I know it's 2-1 for West Ham.
I think I had 2-0. I had 2-0 West Ham. I wasn't sure about tonight, but actually, like you, I didn't get asked. I just said 1-0, so we're both geniuses in that regard. I have a feeling we'll draw 1-1 at Brighton on Saturday. I hope I'm wrong, but I can't be more optimistic than that. They're a bit up and down, but they tend to play well against the bigger sides, and they like trying to turn us over. So I'll go 1-1. What about you?
Oh, I might have gone 1-1 as well. Yeah, beaten Spurs last couple of years, haven't they? A couple of bad ones as well. That 4-2 was a horrible game.
But it was a horrible game, but actually it was such a bizarre game, that, because we actually, from 4-0 down, had enough chances to get a point out of that.
Højbjerg should have scored, shouldn't he?
It was crazy. And then a couple of years before that, of course, Lloris broke his shoulder, whatever it was, and we got stuff there. And daylight robbery when we beat them at home. I think was it the season before last. I don't know how we did that. So I think they still hold a grudge against us. So yeah, I'll go a draw, and which wouldn't be a disaster. But obviously, you get greedy at this stage. I'm looking at the top of the table. I'm thinking we've got Wolves the following week. Let's keep this going while we can. But I think we have to be realistic as well, George, don't we? We can't get too carried away at this stage.
Yeah, I'd go a draw as well, but I'll go high scoring 2-2. I think the team's due to ship a few goals. Tottenham can't keep clean sheets every week. It's not the Tottenham way, is it? I don't think.
It can become the Tottenham way, George. We're happy to. But yeah, I mean, we were lucky against Bournemouth. We could have shipped 2 or 3. But hang on a minute, you're now saying we're going to concede double the amount of goals we've conceded all season at Brighton on Saturday. You're a disgrace, man.
I'm just saying Brighton are as good as PSG. That's all I'm saying.
Well, on that note, I'll let you go and get some kicks. It's been a long day for you. It's ultimately been a good day for Spurs. You know, if you can win when you're not at your best, well, that is a fantastic habit to adopt on a regular basis. So we're up and running in the Champions League. Obviously, we're looking good in the league at the moment, away to Brighton and mighty Doncaster next week. All is well in the Tottenham Hotspur Garden. Thanks to George Sessions. I am Marcus Buckland. As always, the message is there. Come on, you Super Spurs.